Good morning, wakey wakey. It's happened a couple of times now in the past few days that as I've been driving, I've seen someone in like oncoming traffic or beside me at a red light who appears to be absolutely furious. And it just happened again. And I think about the times in my life where I've lost my cool, flipped my lid, and had a demonstration of anger, had an outburst of anger. And what does it do? What does the anger do to you? It robs you of your joy. It robs you of the next moment that you could enjoy. Anger also really messes with your headspace. There's this, not that I want to preach or anything, but there's a line in the Bible that talks about how both the blessings and the curses, or a theme, both the blessings and the curses of a generation will kind of trickle down to the following generations. And what we know about anger, that hyperventilated headspace, when you're really frustrated, when you're really just, you're having a total amygdala hijack, it rewires the plumbing of your brain. Does that make sense? It rewires the neural pathways of your brain. It actually shapes your brain in such a way that it takes you longer and longer and longer and longer periods of time to like get back to a state of balance, to get back to your baseline. I started writing a new book a couple of days ago after being encouraged by some guys to do so. And I have a theory on how we're going to gauge mental health in the future. I believe that the gauge for mental health, what do I mean by that? Let me unpack that for just a tidbit. What I mean by the gauge of mental health is if I saw somebody walking into the door or walking into a room with a cast on their leg and they had crutches and both of their hands were occupied by the crutches, well, I would go open the door for them, wouldn't you? Of course you would. How do we gauge mental health in our society? I believe that we gauge mental health by how quickly we return to baseline. How quickly we return to base. So what is your baseline, right? Like for you, what is base normal? What is base normal? And so when we have these anger outbursts, now I don't mean any disrespect here. And if you're watching this and anyway, I'm just going to say it. Of the people that I have observed just in these hyperventilated, full-blown anger, like you can see the expressions on their face from like 500, you know, from 500 feet away, like 100 yards away or something like that. You know, you can see them coming. You see their hand gestures. You see their, like you see this. It's visible. Like it's, you notice it. At least I've noticed it. They've all been driving cars that are, shall we say, beater? Like, can I say beater? Like, they've been driving cars that, like, they have body damage, or the car's smoking heavily, or there's a busted window in the car, or there's something that's unkept about their vehicle, and it's noticeable. Now, why do I bring that up? I bring that up because of what anger, the other thing that anger robs you from. It robs you from your time. Because it takes time to de-escalate, because it takes time to get out of that amygdala hijack, what I like to call an emotional hijack, it takes your brain time to dissolve that cortisol, that spiked stress. It takes your body time to diffuse that anger, the tense muscles, the jawline, the resting angry face. You know, it takes your body time to absorb that experience and for you to come back to baseline. So it robs you of time, and time is so precious. The nonprofit Life That Counts, everything that we do is to help students make better decisions for more healthy outcomes. Outcomes are experienced over time. They're experienced over time. Let me ask you this. What did you accomplish or not during COVID? John, why do you ask me that? I was thinking about this morning, and as I was walking the poultry house, Alexis and I bought a poultry farm. And now it's something that we get to do every morning together, and we enjoy it. We enjoy the morning routine. I love to see her gentleness come through at the farm. I also love to see her industrious side come through at the farm. Like, we had a little hiccup this morning. She didn't even call me, or she didn't even like message, you know, whatever. We were on different sides of the thing. She didn't even come. She just fixed it. All right. And I was so blown away by that. But I want to ask you, what did you accomplish during or not during COVID? You've always said you're going to do this, that, or the other. Have you done it yet? And my question is, why? And then I want to link that to, do you live in a frustrated headspace? Do you live with boundaries and borders in your own life that are not secure? Do you live at odds with your own self-worth? With the life that counts, the nonprofit that I lead, one thing that I remind our staff on a fairly regular basis, because we are a nonprofit, and those that we serve, we typically don't charge them a fee for our services. Now, in some cases we do, but typically our business model is that we go out, we write grants, we're awarded grants, or some, you know, benevolent generosity comes in to serve a specific area or not, and then we go and we serve that place. But what I remind our staff is while we show up to serve, we're never doormats. Do you live at odds with your own self-worth? What did you accomplish or not during COVID? What is the thing that you said that... Now, this isn't a motivational speech. This is not a motivational talk for your, what is it, Wednesday morning? This is not that. What this is I want you to understand. I want you to be wise. I want you to know what's going on. I want you to know how your anger and your emotional outburst, it's actually robbing you of your future. It's robbing you of a beautiful future. And not only that, you're exposing your kids to it. You're exposing your kids to your angry outbursts. You're exposing your kids to that, and now they're living, especially if you raise your voice and you yell or you break things or you drive real sporadic in traffic, or, you know, it's always a race, you know, and you got to beat the clock or whatever it is, or I've got to beat this car in front of me because he just cut me off, and oh my God, you know, and we're modeling this to our kids, who are in turn picking up our patterns and picking up our behaviors, and our kids are going to push the envelope. What I've experienced, okay, is that our kids, whatever we model for them, they're going to take what we've demonstrated and they're going to push it a little farther. That's what our kids do. I've heard it said that the ceiling that I'm building is the floor that my children will stand on. Whatever it is that we're building, our kids are going to, whatever it is that we're modeling, our kids are going to push it a little farther, just a little further down the road. And so this is why, in another place, again, not to preach or be whatever, but the Bible says the meek shall inherit the earth. Those with a plan, those with, I've got things to do, I don't have time for a hyperventilated headspace. I wrote a blog one time on the line that men are like old trucks. Men are like old trucks. They run better under a heavy load. And if I were to allow anger to steal my headspace, and it's not just while I'm angry. Remember that the cortisol and the adrenal glands and the tense muscles and the thinking itself that's all in knots, right? All of that takes time to unpack and decompress and to absorb. That got even the chemical part side of it takes time to absorb back into your body. And this is why we have to be really cautious with our anger. And this is why we have to be really cautious. We have to set our triggers. I think one of the chapter titles to the book, as I laid out the outline the other day and put some meat on the bones, I think one of the chapter titles is going to be Set Your Triggers. And it's the idea of, remember Forrest Gump, and he's running and he steps in a pile of poo, and it happens, right? It happens. It happens. Stuff happens. Crap happens. It's going to happen. I was the guy that I learned poultry farming from. I was so impressed with him. I was so impressed with him because we would walk into his poultry house and man, it would look like a disaster on some days. And he never lost his, was always calm. He was always, it didn't rattle him. And I was always impressed by that. And in many ways, he taught me how to not be rattled by life stressors. And I so appreciate him for that. I so appreciate just the calm that he displayed in what appeared to me a total meltdown. And so another friend of mine says that we have to learn to be the calm in the room. The calm in the room. And that's a beautiful idea. And this guy is a foster dad. And as we think about, and I don't want to go too far in the woods on this, but even as we think about Erickson's theory of development, and when kids come into foster care, determine the things that they're experiencing, the delayed development even that they may be experiencing. And if we can be that calm in the room, then we can help be agents of peace and agents of healing in another person's life. The book is out there. Maybe I'm going to call my book this because I've said it for a long time and I truly believe it. But there's a book out there that the title of it is Hurt People, Hurt People. But I think I'm going to title mine because I've said it for a very long time. I believe healed people help heal people. Healed people help heal people. My buddy who taught me poultry farming, he's been divorced. That's a pain. My buddy who said that we need to learn to be the calm in the room, the foster dad guy, he had a really rough upbringing and had a really rough experience in religious circles. And he's the one that said, be the calm in the room. And he's the one that when everything, and when the proverbial, minutia hit the fan, right? Maintain their calm and maintain their peace. And so my encouragement to you today, and I didn't mean to go this long on this, but my encouragement to you is simply this. Learn to be the calm in the room. Life is going to happen. Let's be the calm in the room. Let's set our triggers. Let's know that there's going to be hiccups along the way. Let's just know that. Let's know that there are going to be people who drive crazy and there are going to be things that frustrate us and there are going to be things that come into our life that we can't control. But let's be so intentional about our energy and let's be so intentional about our anger. Many of us are walking around like hand grenades with the pin pulled and we're holding the grenade. So many of us are like that, and we have to simmer down. We have to bring it down. We have to decompress. Some of the ways that we can decompress, I don't want to leave you just on a philosophical thought with no action steps. So some of the ways that we can decompress is you can practice breathing. Just practice breathing. I like the idea of box breathing. We teach it the Navy SEALs. Box breathing is inhale for 5 seconds, hold it for 5 seconds, exhale for 5 seconds, repeat the process. I love Amy Cuddy's work on presence, and Amy Cuddy teaches the idea of power posing and, Superman, Superwoman pose, and you can do this while you're brushing your teeth. I love the idea of positive self-talk. And one of the ways that I experience positive self-talk, one guy says to himself, feeling good, looking good, ought to be in Hollywood, But one of the ways that I experience positive self-talk is I find myself here over the last 6 months, 6 to 12 months, I listen to a lot of encouraging preachers, because I'm a person of faith, I listen to a lot of encouraging preachers on YouTube. You have to make this decision. Is the world for me, or is the world conspiring for my good, or is the world conspiring against me? It was attributed to Einstein, but I'm not sure that it was him that said it. One of the greatest decisions that you're ever going to make is the world for you or against you. Is the universe for you or against you? And when we make the decision, for me as a person of faith, when we make the decision that I believe that God is working for my good on my behalf, right? That we do have a spiritual side. We have a spiritual component to us. And there's something in me that connects. So the way I experience positive self-talk is by listening to positive reinforcements. I'm not a fan of the concepts of good and bad. I'm a fan of the concepts of healthy and unhealthy. And I want to encourage you to absorb, to take in healthy, positive reinforcements. And that leads to a healthy, positive headspace. It leads to a healthy, positive self-talk. It will help diffuse anger before it builds up. It will help decompress those stresses before they build up. So got into a little faith stuff. Wasn't entirely intentional. What I wanted to do was just provide just a couple things so that we could, so that we can think through, how to deconfuse, how to de-escalate, how to not get ourselves into a triggered state, into a hyperventilated headspace, or what I like to call an emotional hijack, the amygdala hijack, but where our executive function that lives up here in the left frontal, where it can continue to work and grow and thrive. I hope that makes sense. I hope you have a great day. Until next time.